Well, it seems to me that the 2023-24 season of the OHL podcast has somehow become the OHL off-ice podcast. But here we are again, Dan Mahar, talking about something not on the ice, even when we have these incredible finishes in the final 2 weeks before the playoffs. We will get to those, but we got to start where the league handed down its ruling in, was anybody else calling it Bounty Gate? I don't like gates. Everything's a gate. You know that Watergate was the name of the hotel, right? It wasn't a water gate. So by calling it Bounty Gate, it's like calling it Bounty Gate Gate. We should just stop it. And I think I'm responsible here. I'll stop right there. But in the bounty scandal between the Sudbury Wolves and the Barrie Colts, Nathan Villeneuve of the Sudbury Wolves suspended for 15 games. Evan Cognon of the Wolves suspended for 10. Conduct detrimental to the welfare of the league, violating the social media policy, damaging the integrity of the game. I'm paraphrasing the release from the league, but it's pretty damning stuff, Dan. Where do you want to start on this?
Lots of places we could start on this. I think we joked a week or two ago about, can we just get through a week without anything negative off ice? Because it really does take away from why we're all here, right? Which is to watch these kids put on a great show. The races are as tight as they've ever been. It's a time of year where everything should be ramping up. Everyone should be excited. And again, we're dealing with this off-ice nonsense. So I think this one, Mike, comes down to there's a few different dynamics at play here. I think one would be how the league and the teams deal with these social media policies and training these kids. After all, they are kids. And I'm not trying to dismiss anything that was done. It was pretty dumb from what I understand. You're talking about some joking or otherwise, when you make threats off ice about things that may occur in a game, suggesting that you might reward someone for injuring or hitting another player, well, then that gets pretty serious. So we have to be serious about every aspect of this, how we train these kids, how we teach them to use these things properly. The consequences of their action is a critical thing to train them on. And then, of course, the accountability always comes down to the player. Even though they're kids, we are talking 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds here. They do have brains, and they have to use them a little bit better than we've seen in a few of these off-ice cases this year. So I'll wrap up my thoughts, Mike, by just saying that I'm completely fine with the punishment. I know some people felt it was overly harsh. They say things like it's just words. But we have to choose our words very carefully. There are consequences to actions. And the point I will make for anyone that says this was overly harsh is, remember what we always talk about in this podcast. Everything always comes back to liability. And they say things, well, how, when a guy does something on the ice, how come he only gets 2 or 3 games, but words get you 15? Well, when a guy does something on the ice, the league's reacting to it and saying, okay, we're going to punish him here. We didn't know this was coming. Now imagine the liability on the league if the league did know it was coming, allowed it to happen, someone gets seriously injured, God forbid paralyzed or something worse, and they knew that there was threats made online and they didn't deal with them. So your answers usually lie at liability with this league, and that's why the punishment was so harsh, and that's why the league takes it so seriously. Someone gave them the heads up that this may be coming. Okay, we got to be serious about it. So again, it just comes down to me to use your heads, people. Use your heads. Serious or not, what you say matters, and we got to be a little smarter here.
Gosh, do I ever love where you went with that, Dan, particularly at the end. I might even go so far as to say, just to remove the liability aspect, of course it's there, but it's the way you've described it is almost the difference between manslaughter and first-degree murder, or first and second degree, when it's premeditated, right? So if something was out there for all to see, because one screenshot means it's there forever, then how do you ever defend allowing the game to go on and the players to participate in it should the unthinkable occur? So that is a fantastic point by you. The other thing that you said, and I don't want to be dismissive of, oh, they're just kids either, but is it okay if I say, I'm so glad it wasn't the adults in the room and there wasn't money on the board that more people might have been aware of or something like that, not to excuse it at all. But I did breathe a tiny sigh of relief when the story came out that this was something shared in a team group chat that was then obviously transferred back to Kashawn Aitchison of the Barrie Colts. And here we are. Actions have consequences. And when you talk about these being young men, kids, their brains can be trained just like their bodies. And hopefully we're training them to be good young men, good older men, good human beings along the way, as well as good and better athletes. And if you did this, if I said something like this to you, Dan, even if I was joking, context not being able to be determined online, it could become something that I find myself in hot water for in the real world, forget in the sporting world. So this is a teachable moment for young kids. I'm with you 100% when you talk about the punishment fitting the crime in this case. Yeah, it's harsh. The longest suspension I can remember, and I should have gone back through everything, but the Ontario Hockey League does a pretty good job of removing the previous suspensions after a little while. You can't go back and look at the whole year, but I think the longest we've had this year was a 10-game suspension. And that was for the hit to the head that knocked out Bryce McConnell Barker for 15 games. So the player was out longer than the player that hit him was suspended. But you get 10 games for the hit that injures somebody pretty seriously and 15 games just for the threat. But again, you've summed it up really well here. And I just hope, like, I'm sure the league didn't want to. Maybe they didn't want to have to go through this. They delivered the punishment or the consequences they needed to deliver. Maybe it took them a little while, but I don't see any other option really that the league had in this regard.
I totally agree. And I think the whole thing boils down, I don't want to get into a whole long philosophical discussion about ethics here, Mike, but I think it boils back down to this with this culture we have in hockey, where I'd like to think that the root takeaway here is to understand these things are wrong and we can't do them, rather than how they're done. So I saw some chatter online where the takeaway was, oh, well, you're stupid to post it in a chat. These things happen all the time. Just keep it quiet. Keep hush hush. But when you're talking about ethics, the ethics are realizing that it's the action itself of trying to encourage someone to injure someone else that is the problem. It's not what was posted in chat. It's not the how this was conveyed to anyone. It's the thought process. And you may be mad about something that happened in a game. Teenagers, it happens. You know what? Go legally be physical with those players next time. Go legally take it out. There's all kinds of ways you can exact your revenge without crossing lines. And a very severe line was crossed here. And I think that's the bottom line for me. Do the crime, do the time.
This is where it's a little bit easier as an older adult away from the heat of the moment, right? Because again, you touch on something that is allowed within the context of this game. And frankly, something that I welcome within the context of this game. Take a number. Next shift, I'm going to take your head off. If you say something like that, it gets overheard. You might find yourself running into trouble anyway in the game today, and it comes up with a 2-game suspension. But, you know, next shift, I'm going to get you. Whatever it happens to be, or just take that number and then exact your revenge that way. Because this is away from the game. The heat, the hottest part of the moment, is now removed. This is the opportunity for sober second thought. And clearly you took none of it. I want to add this too. Again, not to in any way diminish the action here, but I personally don't believe for a second either Nathan Villeneuve or Evan Cognon meant anything. I would be willing to bet money that there would have been no money exchanging hands. It's just one of those things. But to your point again on culture, which I think is an excellent point, that's what this speaks to. The game is such a beautiful game. It allows you to take that number and exact your revenge within the rules of the game. Take advantage of that. And after the fact, take the breath. I'll remind you, in this, the initial hit on Villeneuve led to a fight. And Kashawn Aitchison had to answer for his physicality in the moment. We've talked about that too, how both of us don't love that part of the game. As much as we're okay with fighting, fighting after a clean hit is goofy. So it already happened. And this is where, again, the lesson has to be, and I think that's why you've got the severity of the 15 games and the 10 games here, the severity of the lesson, the extent of the punishment has to send home that message. And let's hope, and listen, we can also be clear about how stupid it is. Once you put it on the internet, it is there forever. These podcasts, Dan, that go up on our OHL podcast YouTube channel, they are here forever. We're not always at our best. We're doing this live. We look different today than we're going to look 50 years from now. I'll be dead 50 years from now, but people can come back and mock this, and God knows what they'll do with AI someday. It's forever, kid. So let's remember that.
And you hit the nail on the head a minute ago. Is that there's also a price for stupidity. And let's face it, all due respect, Mr. Kanyon, all due respect, Mr. Villeneuve, this was stupidity and there's a price for it. And the league has to send a message too to everyone else listening, saying, yeah, yeah, this happens all the time. Well, you know what? Maybe it shouldn't, because the league takes this very seriously. And that message hopefully is received loud and clear. Because I think you already mentioned the Aitchison hit was a good hit, but a clean hit. And it's allowed within the confines of the game. He probably shouldn't have even had to answer for it that night, but he did. So where are we going with this? Let's be smart. Price for stupidity.
Here's a bigger existential question for you. So with the 15-game ban for Villeneuve, he could come back game six, round one. Kanyon misses the first two games, if I'm not mistaken. So he'd come back early. He'll be back in round one. How much will it matter to the Sudbury Wolves, who needed nine to beat the Windsor Spitfires this past week? A 9-8 overtime win versus Windsor. Wowzers, you Wolves.
Mike, I hate to answer a question with a question, but how confident are you with the prediction of Sudbury coming to that conference? Because I know I'm not. I had the same thing. And you, at no point, despite the additions to the roster, shoring up the goaltending, everything they've done all year, at no point have they demonstrated an ability to keep the puck out of the net. And that's going to come back to haunt. There's no team I can ever remember that has this much trouble keeping the puck on the net that's gone far in the playoffs. So unless there's a massive U-turn coming, I'd be very, very concerned if I were the Sudbury Wolves.
If you want to have your glass half full in the Nickel City, and it won't freeze over because it's been a mild winter. So here's your glass half full. Let's just hope that it continues, because how amazing would that playoff be with the Wolves just outscoring the opposition game after game after game? Unfortunately, as the playoffs wear on, particularly, that style tends to wear pretty thin pretty quick. So I don't know what you can do in the final five, six games of the season. But if I'm a Wolves fan, I'm holding my breath a wee bit. It's been a half century in the making. But and oh, boy, is it fun to watch. You're getting your money's worth every night in that arena. And that train horn and that wolf on the wire, it's all great. But boy, oh boy, come round three, if you're still kicking tires in this league, look out, because it won't be easy.
Well, Mike, you look who their road's going to go through, right? I watched them play North Bay on the weekend, and you look at that battalion team that's bolstered that. Like we talked, they added a big body in Bronson Wright on the back end. They got Jacob LeBlanc back there to already bolster a team that had Ty Nelson and Paul Christopoulos. And they've got a playoff-tested back end that's big. And sure enough, those goals dried up for Sudbury in a hurry. Just two goals in that game, another loss. So you're going to run into that. Your Goyettes and your high-flying offense are going to have trouble scoring at the rate they did in the regular season. So if you can't turn it around on the other team and prevent it, you're in big trouble. And I just have not seen evidence of that yet.
You didn't even mention Dom DeVincentis, right? You're going to have to go through Matteo Drobak and a pretty heavy Brantford Bulldogs team. You've got Ryerson Leanders in your conference. I mean, and all of these teams we know are still in the mix. So it just goes on and on from there. Ottawa's not out of this by any stretch of the imagination. One of our emailers asked just the other week if Barrie could pull off a first-round upset. Should it be Barrie-Sudbury? We both doubted that, but again, you look at needing nine to beat the Windsor Spitfires and you think, okay, so this is how we're going to play it, huh?
You didn't even mention the first place team, Mike. That's going to be,
of course, how could I forget? I was still thinking
Sudbury. Ottawa Generals are going to have something to say about that, right? So like you said, pick your poison. I see a bunch of teams in that conference that are going to give the Sudbury Wolves an awful lot of trouble based on how they're defending.
Braden Gillespie is coming off a save of the year candidate this past week with Oshawa. So, okay, let's go from one side of the ledger to the other, and from the east over to the west, where ho-hum, make it back to back to back to back to back Joe Holiday trophies for the London Knights as Midwest Division champions. Five consecutive years, 13 of the past 25 division crowns have gone to the London Knights. The Erie Otters have six Midwest titles, the Kitchener Rangers three, the Guelph Storm two, and the Owen Sound Attack have gotten into the act with one. but the London Knights, courtesy of a win over the Kitchener Rangers on the weekend, make it 5 in a row, 13 of 25. Say what you want about how it gets done. Say what you want about the big green machine. Call them what you want. You better call them champions because they keep winning divisions. If it counts for anything. I've heard people say, why hang a division banner? It really doesn't matter. Well, you know what? I think it's an accomplishment.
Well, if we're going to speak to culture in the league and in hockey, I think we need to speak to culture in a team like London who keeps having success. And like you just said, say what you want. I know there are aspects, I'll be the first to admit, there are aspects of that culture I don't love. Some of the shenanigans, some of the line crossing. But there's aspects of that culture I do love, and that is the structure, the swagger they play with. I watched them play the Rangers on Saturday at home, a big should have been a heavyweight bout, yet again, seems like 80% of the time, that London team just comes out with tons of structure, tons of reinforcement, come at you in waves, come at you in layers, seldom out of position, not giving you room, whole team committed. You're dealing with the whole lineup, not just the top end. So whatever they've created in London works. And when you get into those big matchups, that's why it's tough. There's a confidence there that comes with knowing four other guys on the ice have your back and another dozen on the bench. So there's a confidence there. It's not, you know, your top guy feeling like, oh, he has to do everything. And if he doesn't do anything, then it spirals down to the lineup. So London has created that dynamic and it works, Mike.
You just used a word, Dan, that struck a chord with me when you said commitment, because I alluded to earlier, say what you want about how the London Knights are built and where the players come from and how they end up in London. You can have whatever theories you want on that. You're still getting the players into the city, onto the team to continue winning. Culture, yes, but commitment is what jumped out at me, because I just earlier today finished one of the feature interviews that you'll hear in a couple of weeks with a coach that has been incredibly successful. He came through the Ontario Hockey League. His success was found in Europe mostly, but multiple championships. He's highly sought after for coaching advice. And he talked about what it takes to build a championship. And he said, you need leadership. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the other one, and commitment. He said, you can take the most talented players, but if you don't have commitment, and that was his number one, and that's why it stood out to me when you said it, you're not going to get the results, the championship results you need. Well, 13 times in the past 25 years, the London Knights have gotten the commitment from their players, whatever players those were coming onto the team, to go out there, execute better than the opposition, and win more games. It's a rather incredible machine, no matter how it was assembled. So it's not meant to be a love letter to the London Knights here today, but you have to acknowledge the greatness that the program has churned out on a consistent basis. And I might still argue, you know, Easton Cowan's point streak now at 32 games, one shy of the London Knights franchise record. Dave Gilmore set that. No relation to Doug. Doug Gilmore holds the CHL record, 55 games. That one's safe. David Gilmore in 93-94. So it's exactly 30 years ago at the Knights, had a 33 game point streak. So one more game if it continues for Easton Cowan. He ties it. Two more, obviously, he sets a new record. Denver Barkey, real nice player. Gaz is off. There's lots of real nice players on the team. But is it the most skilled team in the league right now? I don't know. Saginaw looks pretty good. Sault Ste. Marie looks pretty good. Lots of teams look pretty good. Commitment. It matters, and they're getting it.
If I were to boil it down to one thing, because we talked about the commitment and the structure, and all those things are important. But for me, the top of the heap is just compete level. The team with the highest compete level usually wins. And that's, I mean, obviously there's a huge skill gap. That's not always true. But when you get to the playoffs, there isn't a huge skill gap. These teams are all good, especially at the top ends of the conference. Team that competes harder. And I think when you find the London Knights are probably the most consistent team in that regard. Sue and Saginaw are right up there as well. Not trying to just diminish them. But I think what we saw in that Kitchener game is that the Rangers' compete level didn't match the Knights. And I think that's not a slam at Kitchener either, but I think when you're talking at that level of play, if you have even one of the four players on the ice not quite matching that compete level, the whole structure breaks down. And when you've got five coming the other way at you, all matching that compete level, that's the difference. And I think that if other teams in the league could learn anything from the London Knights, it's how to consistently match that compete level. be honest with yourselves. If you're competing at the max you've got, you're fine. But you have to ask yourself that question, because what I see from the London Knights is they usually are.
So you're committing to competing at 100%. So give me five A-minus players at 100% compete level versus five A-plus players at 85% compete level, and I'll show you the team that I believe committed to competing harder that will come out on top. I didn't mention Denver Barkey a moment ago. Obviously, I should. He signed this week his ELC, the old entry-level contract, with the Philadelphia Flyers a week after Max McHugh did with the Columbus Blue Jackets. I don't know if we mentioned him last week. And just while we're on that, the Dallas Stars have a couple in Connor Punnett from the Oshawa Generals. And how about the local boy, at least local to us here in Kitchener, Justin Ertl. Yes, of that Ertl family, his dad, Tyler, coaches with Sault Ste. Marie right now. Justin Ertl of the North Bay Battalion has signed his ELC with the Dallas Stars as well. Way to go to those guys. It's a pretty big step.
Two of my favorite overage players in this league, just guys that have pro tools, right? Pro tools. You watch them play. And if the Dallas Stars were watching the North Bay Battalion over the last month or so, you hear Ertl a lot during those broadcasts, because that player's always around the puck, always around the net. And that's projectable. And congratulations to him. I know how hard you work to get where you are. And, you know, you might not be where you wanted to be at 18 or 19, and you just keep going and look how it pays off. And you know how I feel about Connor Punnett, and look what he's done for that Oshawa Generals back end. Sometimes a singular piece there makes a whole whack of difference for a team. So I am both richly deserving players, as well as the players from the Western Conference you mentioned as well. Denver Barkey's a little bit different style of player, drafted a little higher, smaller skilled player. So I think that was expected. He would get the ELC sooner than later. So congrats to all these players. It's hard work pays off.
You brought this to my attention as we were talking with the London Knights and five straight division titles, et cetera. The Erie Otters are going back to a place they were quite familiar with for quite some time, but for the first time since they won a championship, they're going back to the playoffs. And this one caught me a little bit off guard. Now, in fairness, so you say first time since 2017, you're like, what, 7 years? Well, two of those years, there were no playoffs. So really, they've missed four times. And now in year number five, they're going back. But still, and they were almost, Dan, they were almost a model of consistency in missing the playoffs. They had 56 points in 18, 56 again in 19. Then in 2020, they had 63 points and get credited with making the playoffs. But that was the season that ended prematurely because COVID came along, and they were only 1 point up with five games to go. So who knows what would have happened there. 21, there was no season at all. In 22, back to 58 points. So just look at that, 56, 56, 63, 58. Then last year, a real setback with 49. But now the Erie Otters are returning to the OHL postseason.
Yeah, 2017 sounds like an eternity ago, right? In junior hockey circles. And I know there was all those factors you just mentioned. So it wasn't just, you know, the team was terrible and incompetence. It wasn't any of that. There were different factors at play. Had some good seasons that weren't rewarded. They had obviously two lost seasons. However, my main takeaway from this whole thing, Mike, is just for the fans. A junior hockey market should not go that long without seeing playoff hockey. So I really feel great for those Erie Otter fans that they're going to have it returning, because if there's one thing I've consistently heard about buildings in the league, and you can speak more intelligently this than I can, Mike, having not been to Erie, but that building, from everything I've heard, is electric. The fans are great. The fans are into it in a positive way. They'll heckle the other team, but in a appropriate way. And they're just all over the opposing team, all over the cheering the home team on, just right on top of the fans. So that's what playoff hockey can look like in Erie, and how exciting it's got to be for those fans to see it for the first time since 2017.
It's funny you mentioned that, the arena and the environment, because I was going to bring up that those fans this past weekend showed up 5,000 plus for the first of back-to-back with the Owen Sound Attack. It was a lower crowd on the Sunday, but you've got the same team back-to-back. But a Saturday night at the Erie Insurance Arena, 5,000 plus, it's a tough environment to be in if you're the Owen Sound Attack, for sure. So that's fantastic. And it's always been that way. You go back even pre-renovation, the days of the Buck of Beer nights, like you'd watch some of these fans. I'm like, how are you possibly carrying that many cups of beer? They're down there. They're banging the glass. It's a really knowledgeable hockey market. They're passionate about their Otters. And I'm going to say again, we've talked about this before. It's not a team that I would be all that comfortable facing in the first round if I'm one of the upper tier teams in the Western Conference, because the Otters have started playing better hockey. You always know they're going to be stingy defensively when they're Stan Butler coach. They've got enough game breakers, I think, offensively, if necessary or when called upon. And they're doing it still without Benjamin Gaudreau. So then you bring back this battle-tested guy, and who knows, the layoff might hurt, and they're getting obviously good enough goaltending right now, but I think the Gaudreau factor is a bit of a wild card, and the Erie Otters could be a tough first round out.
Well, we know Benjamin Gaudreau could be the difference alone, right? So then you look at that. That's a huge X factor I sure as heck wouldn't want to face. But then you talk about the sneaky good lineup up front, right? They can score goals in bunches when they want to. And we've seen this kind of mercurial Erie team. Like, we don't know what they are sometimes. Some nights they, you see the 6-1 loss, you say, yeah, this team's not for real. Then they turn around the next night and win 6-2 and they steamroll you. They get 4 goals in a 5-minute span. And they've really got that talent level to do that. I've always felt with this Erie roster this year that it'll go as far as the back end can take it. We know they've got a lot of forwards up front that can strike at your heart, but can the back end hang with the big boys at this time of year? And that's a test coming up for them. And I've said all along, they've been my dark horse in the West, and I would not be terribly thrilled to have to face the Erie Otters in the first round.
Listen, don't worry, Erie Otters fans, okay? If you think, boy, a 7-year playoff drought, circumstances notwithstanding, is going to be a dubious distinction to carry with us for a while, you won't have to carry it much longer. I present to you the Niagara Ice Dogs, okay? If you put their combined wins together the past 2 seasons, they'd be lucky to make the playoffs this year. So don't worry, Erie, you're just fine. Unfortunately for Guelph, this weekend could not have turned out any worse for them. Not that they're missing the playoffs or in danger of running a long streak of playoff losses, but Erie and Owen Sound, the teams that are right there in the mix with Guelph in the Western Conference, play each other, and both games are 3-point games. One goes to OT, the other goes to a shootout, and Guelph is like, are you kidding me? You're giving each of these teams points each night, no matter what. And now we're in 7th place. Why? Why does this happen to the Guelph Storm?
That's definitely one way to look at it. But I think the Guelph Storm would probably agree with me when I say, you make your own bed, and you're in this situation when you probably shouldn't have been due to some periods of pretty down play over the course of the year. They're definitely a team. Them and Owen Sound jump out at me in the entire 20-team league as two teams whose point totals do not match their skill level. For whatever reason, probably 10 or 15 reasons, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast, but neither one of them really should be in this position. They should have been better, which can be a scary proposition also for your opponent in the playoffs to say, well, this is a team that's kind of underachieved all year, but what are we doing drawing Cedric Gindon, Colby Barlow, Denny Gur in the first round? What are we doing facing Bushinger and Allen and of course, Braden Gillespie, we talked about, has been great, and Braden Bowman. Like, how are these teams our reward for finishing high in the standing? So, but it's going to make for an entertaining first round.
Man, oh man, thanks for the Braden Gillespie. It was Jacob Oster, the other former Storm. I was thinking when I said the save of the year candidate with Oshawa before, Jacob Oster. I'm sorry. Guelph, Oshawa, goaltending, of course, Gillespie still in Guelph. Okay. Is there really another market in Ontario that's kicking tires for an OHL franchise? It can't really, can it? Plus, a couple of nits I really need to pick this week. Some fantastic finishes coming up in both conferences and our prospects of the week. We've got all of that still to come for you on this episode of the OHL Off Ice, But Now We're Back on Ice podcast. And John Best at the Bay Observer in Hamilton, look, does really good work at the Bay Observer. I admire his reporting. And he's talking about a proposal by a development company in Burlington for a hotel arena complex that would include 2 ice surfaces, one of which would be large enough to host an OHL team. And John goes so far as to suggest it would make some sense that Burlington, Hamilton, Bulldogs, Brantford, UMA, Oprah, the Bulldogs aren't going to Brantford or aren't going to Burlington, right? They're going to stay in Brantford. You would have to pry them with the jaws of life out of Brantford right now. But is Burlington all of a sudden considering itself some kind of OHL-ready market or soon to be?
Let's start on the Brantford point. 100% that community deserves that team. They deserve to keep that team. They will keep that team. So I don't want to concern any of our Brantford listeners. I think that ship has hopefully sailed in the right direction for them. The Aldershot Ice Dogs? I don't know. I'm just joking. But I think it makes a lot of sense to me for communities planning these things to plan for arenas like this. Why? The population base is there to support a facility like that, regardless of OHL hockey, right? For concert shows, you name it, other levels of other sports, women's hockey growing, who knows if they target a team in that loop. So it makes sense to me to have the facility. Lots of communities always regret not having done that when they get decades down the road and they don't have a facility like that or an undersized one. But it also does give you that inside track and targeting an OHL franchise if push comes to shove. And if you have it ready, the facility's built, when these issues arise, like we've seen with some of these OHL franchises, like the Steelheads just moving slightly north, you can just put your hand up and say, look, we got it. Come on, let's go. So I totally agree with the community's decision to do that. Who knows how it will play out over time. I don't think it's going to be Brantford, but you never say never. And I think that the population base, you look at the sheer number of OHL players that come from that region of the province, to me, it makes a pretty good fit. It's just, is it too GTA-ish to support the team?
That's the concern I have. And even more so, it's like a sleeper community for the GTA, right? Burlington is the place where people go to get away from it all. And then because, right, they're going to either go there to visit and check out nice restaurants and get down by the water, et cetera, or they're going to live there and commute either to Hamilton or to maybe even, you know, a little bit north into Guelph or Cambridge or, you know, further east into Toronto to do their work. It doesn't scream junior hockey market to me. However, if it was going to be, you already made reference to the Steelheads. We know they're getting a sweetheart deal at the Brantford or at the Brampton Arena, but maybe when that sweetheart deal expires, because they don't build these arenas overnight, the one in Burlington's ready and they're like, hey, come on down here for the next sweetheart deal and try something new. It could happen. I just, no offense, Burlington, I don't know you all that well, but I wouldn't take you on a first date. Sorry. It's just not something that I see, a place that I see the Ontario Hockey League necessarily fitting. I guess it remains to be seen. And I'm also curious about what you said, Dan. I get where you're coming from, but we're also talking about this as pretty passionate junior hockey fans. I wonder about our changing demographic. And that was one of the knocks, you know, further down the list, but in Mississauga and outside of Toronto Center, hockey in this country is changing. And we know enrollment's dropping and stuff. And I wonder a generation from now, if we might not want and or need more different kinds of recreational facilities to accommodate the future of Southern Ontario. Might not be around to see it in our lifetimes, but two generations out, who knows if getting on frozen water with steel blades beneath your feet is the pastime of choice. Anyway, bottom line is I don't really see Burlington as a destination for the Ontario Hockey League, and heaven forbid if they go anywhere other than Cornwall with the next new market. I want the Royals back.
I can't argue with you on that one, other than, damn it, I want the Belleville Bulls back. So,
oh, good one too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of deserving communities in this province that that have a history of these teams and supporting them. So yeah, expansion. Can we talk about expansion?
It did cross my mind, but that's a little above my pay grade. I'll tell you what, though. We'll do some more tire kicking over this upcoming offseason and see what expansion looks like. But it sounds nice. It's a lot more complicated than it sounds on paper. So maybe we'll get the chance to do a deep dive into that at some point down the road. Okay, not a deep dive at all, but I just wanted to touch on two things that have really bothered me, especially lately. One's been kind of simmering through the season, and one just came to a head this past weekend because I was in the arena where it was happening. And I know if it's too loud, you're too old. Fine, call me old. But I cannot stand the artificially allowed arenas. And Budweiser Gardens, I'm looking at you. There's 9,036 fans announced. There's probably a little bit less, but whatever. You got 8,000 plus in there. You don't need the volume at 12. It just, Barry used to be really bad for that. As I recall, Barry this year, I only go once, but was much more moderate. It was normal. I don't get it. I wish you'd stop it. Let the crowd generate its own noise, build its own energy. I prefer that. I love a loud arena when it's full of people that are genuinely excited at whatever event it is that they're taking in. So I just want to put a pox on the artificially loud arenas. If anybody cares about me and my well-being at this stage of my life, okay, if you don't care, crank it up, baby, but give an old guy a break. And the other thing, I'm just going to plead with our on-ice officials. Would you mind every once in a while, if it's not too much trouble, good sirs and madams, pick up the damn sticks that get broken or otherwise end up on the ice. I saw one stick get in the way of three different plays in one shift this past weekend. And how many officials had to skate past it as they were going up and down the ice? I know they've got a lot of work to do, but can't you just pick that stuff up? That's all.
So I'm going to go full old guy right with you, Mike, and say that I'm 100% with you on the arena volumes. I know, mock me all you want, being an old guy. We come because we want these buildings to be lively. I cannot stand the volumes at 12 anymore. And you know what? I'm going to call out Kitchener a little bit here. I love the building, love the environment, but is that volume ever cranked on the music between plays and makes it awfully hard to have any kind of conversation in there? So I'm going full old guy and saying, yes, can we just turn it down one or two? And then, yeah, on the stick one, that's been a pet peeve of mine for a long time. And I just watched an NHL game in this past week where a stick was knocked out of a player's hand to the feet of the referee in the corner, skated away. That stick was hit by the puck no fewer than three times on the next minute and a half over that, as that shift went on, and officials skating up and down by. And I know the argument is, well, we don't want to take our eyes off the play. Bend down and pick it up while watching the play, or there's three other officials, trust them for a second. I just think it's ridiculous that they don't just bend down and pick that up, especially when you see it impact the play. So I'm with you on both those, buddy.
I thought actually in Kitchener, because I've heard those complaints before, it seemed to me like it was toned down this year, but you'd have a better perspective because you're in the bowl and I'm stuck up high. I don't know when to finish the point on the sticks and other equipment. We see neck guards all over the ice at times too, and they obviously would be harder to pick up. I just honestly, Dan, don't know when this practice stopped, because I'm old enough to remember a time when these sticks were routinely picked up off the ice, dropped into a bench or into a penalty box. And as play continued, I don't get it. I don't know why it stopped. And like, are officials now too good to pick up the garbage? Like, I don't know.
For me, it's not just an impacting the play standpoint. It's a player safety standpoint. We see those neck guards out there too. Like, do you want to see a torn ACL because a player stepped on one of those at full speed? I mean, I just think that I can think of 100 reasons why it makes sense to pick those up as quickly as you can. And I can't think of too many why you wouldn't. I mean, the only argument I've ever heard for why you don't is, well, if the official looks down for a second and misses a call, but what are the odds? There's three other officials on the ice, et cetera, et cetera. I just pick the stupid things up. And in that NHL game I was talking about, it was actually Elmira's own Garrett Rank who eventually picked that stick up. And he got applause in social media circles for finally picking up the damn stick. So you had fans and hockey reporters throughout the social media sphere saying, just pick the thing up. So I don't think we're alone on this one, Mike.
All right. So I'm going to add this to it then, because I'm not trying to rag on referees and lines persons here at all. Please don't misunderstand. I know you've got a tough job, and I'm not trying to make it difficult or say you're doing a bad job, but I will say that the OHL podcast will give you a standing ovation. The next one of you that picks up the damn stick. Okay. That's on us to you. Go get them, kids. Go get them. All right. Speaking of go get them, are you kidding me with these finishes in the Ontario Hockey League this year? Again, I'll reference my rapidly advancing years. Maybe I forget from one year to the next, but I truly can't remember seeing races like this down to the wire. Starting in the East, we're down to 2 weeks, five, six games to go. Oshawa, 79 points. Brantford, 78. Sudbury, 77. You picking up the trend yet? North Bay, 76. Mississauga, 75. There's five teams, 4 points. And then, oh yeah, for good measure, put Ottawa in there at 73. Six teams, 6 points. Any one of them could still conceivably finish first. It's wild.
And I believe the first place team has five games left, but the second, third, and fourth all have six games left. So that just further tightens that picture up. And I think kudos to the OHL schedule makers. When you look at a lot of the remaining games, there's some head-to-heads in there too. So a whole lot of intrigue in the last couple of weeks of the season. That's how you love to see it.
I started to look at those remaining games and tried to put this together as a better projection for you. I don't have the capacity. I'll leave that for some quantum computer to figure out, but it is incredibly entertaining. I think the lead in the East changed hands at least once, but two or three times last week, because Brantford was there for a minute. I think Sudbury clawed its way back up. Oshawa is there right now. Oshawa and Brantford played one another. It's been so much fun. It looks great on the league. And then in the West, while the top is pretty much settled, we know the top four, Saginaw and London are going to come right down to the wire for first place overall. But then 5 through 8 in the Western Conference, you've got Owen Sound in fifth, 64 points, Erie, 63, Guelph, 62. And then there are the Flint Firebirds with 60 points. So four teams, 4 points, and any one of them could finish fifth, and any one of them could finish eighth. This is what we wait all season for.
But it's great for those fans in those markets too, right? Like, even if you are one of those seventh, eighth place teams and you don't have a whole lot of hope for a Memorial Cup championship this year, you're right into it though. You're right into making the playoffs, getting some playoff action. And when you are, I mean, you're talking about those high-end teams. You just described the East. That's, you know, 77 at the top of the conference and 73 more than halfway down. So those teams are virtually identical. Any team could win. And I don't even think in the West it's that different. Like, would it stun you if the Owen Sound Attack won, or the Guelph Storm won, or the Flint Firebirds are capable of? These are all good teams, is my point. We talked with the Erie Otters. Like, these teams could all pull off upsets, and that's the perfect scenario for a league.
I was a little disappointed with the Flint Firebirds team I got to see up close this weekend. I wish I could view more games, but I get pretty busy with the 68 I have to cover. But the numbers alone, like, I still think the Flint Firebirds are a pretty dangerous team. Their goals against has come down nicely by a full half a goal since the trade deadline. And if you look at just the 12 games they had played coming into this weekend, they had won 8 of them. They end up splitting on the weekend, but, you know, 8 of 12, their goals against was well below 3. Really playing, they play a bit of a nasty game. They've got some offense, but from the net out, they're starting to play exactly the way you'd want a playoff team to play. And I said this earlier about Erie being a team I might not all be all that interested in if I'm a top team in the West. Flint, at least coming into the weekend, had been playing like one of those teams for me as well.
Yeah, I think you just triggered something that when I watched that team, you're right. We in Kitchener this week, we probably didn't see their best. Having said that, you see the components there, right? I saw that the Klinkhammer, Clattenburg, Aspinall line. That's a playoff built line, right? Like, throwing their weight around, getting the body on. When Flint needed a spark in that game, that two came out and they were running. They were running around, getting the energy going. And then you can turn the game over to some of the skill players, some of the fireballs up front to finish. So if they get some goaltending from Nathan Dayonet, they're a dangerous team. I hate to see, it looks like Caden Petrie's likely not coming back due to his injury, which is unfortunate, but a lot to be enthusiastic about if you're Flynn.
Quick shout out to Nolan Dan. He's a local boy in our region anyway, from Cambridge. First career hat trick, added an assist, and it comes in a losing effort, but boy, oh boy, if you're going to get it in front of the home fans, if you will. And he's having himself a nice season with the Firebirds. Okay, I think I've brought us up to the point where we get to our prospects of the week, Dansky. Who you got for us this week?
Okay, well, it's March and I have yet to pick a Kitchener Ranger, so I can be a homer, right?
Okay, yeah, of course you can.
Okay, all right.
I'm a homer every week, so go ahead.
I've got to give a shout out to Luke Ellenis. I know you picked him before, but We saw the hat trick come this week, but the reason I want to give him a shout is we call this segment Prospect of the Week because these are guys that are on NHL radar. And I've gone from thinking this guy had, you know, was a long shot to thinking he's got a decent chance to get drafted to giving you my Dan Mahar guarantee. Someone's going to pick this kid this year in the draft. And the reason being is Pro Tools all day. He's always had that extreme work ethic, 200-foot game, physicality up and down. I think 6'1", nearly 190, but plays even bigger. A real team guy that does everything well. The missing piece was the offense. Where was it? And I think this is a guy that's now discovered his shot. He's got a really heavy shot, quick release, and he's finding the accuracy now, figuring out as a 17-year-old later in the season how to find those pockets, how to get open, and how quickly he needs to release it, and some of that muscle memory for accuracy as well. And so you're starting to see him bury some shots. And I guarantee you NHL scouts are taking notice. They see the NHL tools all over him and say, well, if there's a little projectable offense here, this guy's worth a draft pick, a low-round draft pick. So my guy's Luke Elnes. Mike, who you got?
Yeah, and his hat trick, I'll just add to all three goals in a different way, just showing a little bit of the tools that he has there in that toolkit. It's a great pick, and I've really liked watching the guy come along. I went to the East this week just because I'm enjoying that race so much, and I took a player from one of the teams that had its moment in the sun at the top of the East for a moment in the Brantford Bulldogs. I've picked him before, but I've been keeping my eye on him, and I'm not breaking any new ground here when I go back to Merrick Van Acker. But so one of the things I liked about him, he had 7 points in his past three games, but three of them, a goal and two assists, came in the comeback, although it fell short against the Oshawa Generals. I just think there's something about a player that's going to be there to say, okay, guys, like, follow along or I'll be a part of the story. Oshawa got up 4-0 in that game, and the Bulldogs had every reason just to fold up and say, okay, we're done. But nope, they come back to make it 4-3. Oh, it's 5-3. Oh, it's 5-4 on a Merrick Van Acker goal, or maybe he had the assist on that one. But either way, a goal and two assists in the comeback bid that fell short. That's the kind of guy I want on my team. Merrick Van Acker with his 7 points in three games is my prospect of the week.
Great call. You know how much I love that kid. You know, following this various scouting lists all year, Mike, what I really noticed about Merrick Van Acker is starting point, consistently moving up that ladder. Every time I see another list come out, he's leapfrogged another OHL player. And that's not a knock on those other OHL players. But what that says to me is the scouts are watching this league and saying, you know, we had this guy miscast. He's actually better. Oh, you know what? I think he's better than these two. I think he's actually better than these two. So with every month, when you move the right way on that list, that's what they call a late riser in the draft. And those guys tend to come out of nowhere and be picked a lot sooner than people were thinking.
Well, and I know I'm not telling tales out of school when I add this to the mix, Dan, or to the equation. You know what else really helps a prospect's? Playoff runs. And there is a very good opportunity for perhaps both of the players we mentioned today, and Luke Elnes and Merrick Van Acker, to go sometime into April and or late April this season. So never hurts.
Excellent point, Mike, because I know you being a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, I know full well hearing directly from scouting staffs that it was the playoff run last year that vaulted Easton Cowan up those boards. So you're a very good point on what's to come.
All right. What's to come for us? Well, a week off, watch some more hockey, get ready for the playoff races, and encourage you, of course, as always, to like, subscribe, tell a friend. If you're not on our YouTube channel, get on the YouTube channel, get us on Instagram at OHL Podcast, and send an email anytime, OHLPodcast@rogers.com. He is Dan Mahar. Find him on Twitter at Dan Mahar. I'm Mike Farwell at Farwell_OHL. Thanks for listening to the OHL Podcast.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.